Welcome back to FinTalk, brought to you by Vermo. Here we discuss pressing topics in fintech, regtech, covering regulatory, collateral and digital across banking and insurance and finance. Vermo has been proud to deliver innovative software solutions in the industry with stability and cost efficiency for our global watchdog clients. With over 20 years of trusted transformation in finance and insurance, we're bringing industry's top expertise to FinTalk. I'm Jared Akhtar, and I'll be your host for this podcast. Welcome back to FinTalk, brought to you by Vermo. I'm Jared Akhtar, your host. So today, delighted to have Jessica Kath from Thistle. Welcome, Jess.
Thank you very much for having me.
I was saying to the guys, it's the first time in three seasons we're going to actually talk about financial crime.
I'm shocked. It's a key topic.
I know. It's a bad point on my side. So, but yeah, it's quite a lot to cover in this short time. So I want to dive straight in. The FCA's Dear CEO letter. It's kind of good to see it. The FCA provided the SEO letter. We see a lot from the PRA. So what does it apply to and what are the key issues?
Yeah, so the recent Dear CEO letter, it seems like the FCA throws these out in March. So if everyone just prepares for March, there will be some kind of letter. And the recent one that just came out was targeted at Annex 1 firms. So these firms are registered with the FCA for money laundering oversight under the money laundering regulations. They're not fully authorized firms. So they're not sort of big banks or anything. But they're firms that are sort of specific credit lenders, and there's lots of different sort of niche firms that fall under the Annex 1 definition. But what's really interesting here is that whilst it's just targeting Annex 1 firms, there are so many other different themes that can be applied across different firm types. So even if you're not an Annex 1 firm, it's really important to read it, and we can talk about it in a bit more detail. But ultimately, a lot of these problems that the FCA has picked out in this letter as being weaknesses in financial crime prevention are what we're seeing across lots of firms.
We see that a lot. We cover a lot of the PRA Dear CEO letters as well. What do firms have to do? And that's the key message. So yeah, your experience, what's the guide?
So in the letter, they broke down four key areas that are problematic. The first one is firms not really having a right understanding about their activities and how it falls into scope of the money laundering requirements. And therefore, if you don't really know what your activities are, how can you build the right financial crime controls to actually align with the risks associated with those activities? So the FCA firstly picked out, this is a problem, you need to know what you're doing, and then build an appropriate model around that. And then the second piece is around risk assessments. And this is a key thing that we're seeing with a lot of firms. We do a lot of audits and assurance, but also a lot of supporting firms to sort of build these. And this is a financial crime risk assessment that covers both the business-wide risk assessment. So this is stepping back and looking at your business and thinking, what are your financial crime risks and how do we build controls that map to those? But then also the customer risk assessment. This is assessing the specific risk associated with your customer and then applying a risk rating or some kind of risk level to it. And then the third thing that the FCA picked out was more around due diligence, which again is a core financial crime control. So making sure that your customer due diligence at onboarding is done really, really well, but also on an ongoing basis. And of course, this needs to be driven by the customer risk assessment. So you need to understand, what are the risks associated with your customer? Is it more fraud related? Are they sort of high risk of money laundering? Are they in a high risk jurisdiction? You know, are they in a high risk sector that could be really open to drug trafficking or something like that? That all needs to be taken into consideration. And if you do identify any of those, we need to be applying enhanced due diligence to those as well. But then another thing that they picked out, which is key across all of the businesses, is something that's kind of forgotten when it comes to financial crime prevention. And that is looking at your wider governance structure.
Yeah.
So do you have a financial crime risk committee? Are the issues properly raised at that committee? And are they then fed up to your board? Very, very simply, have you got financial crime as an agenda point at your board? They might just be talking about your sales and your target and your growth.
Yeah.
But make sure you have financial crime at the board level as well. So looking at governance, management information, and also training was something that the FCA picked out in the letter as well. So, I mean, those are the four themes. But it touches a lot of different issues that we're seeing across many different firms.
It's interesting that you raise those points because they're not new.
No.
They've been around for such a long time. And it's good to see that it's been picked up from that side of of the industry as well. What is the wider backdrop of the Dear CEO letter? And, you know, what is the FCA focusing on, and what are the key themes, please?
Yeah, you are absolutely right. None of these problems are new. I was in a sort of deep dive sort of workshopping session with the FCA last week, and they were very clear that, for example, firms not having a strong financial crime risk assessment, or super weak customer risk assessments as well, were themes that they were seeing across lots of different firms. So, for example, crypto firms, and we did a lot with crypto firms, payments, e-money, more traditional wealth managers and our investment firms, just missing out on these really simple concepts about making sure that you identify your financial crime risks, understand whether or not you're really exposed to them, and then actually building things that map against that. Because quite often firms are still doing the tick box, let's just do due diligence, what is the minimum level we need to apply? And that is not what the FCA is looking for at all. It's really understanding your risks and building those out. I mean, for example, a crypto firm really needs to understand what coins have they got on their platform? What is their product? What is the access points? What jurisdictions are you covering to make sure they can build the appropriate control frameworks to operate effectively without, you know, allowing a lot of different, perhaps, I don't know, North Korean gangs running through your different exchanges or whatever it is to launder money, or making sure that that's not happening through their platform. And so the wider context is the FCA is looking to come after firms a lot harder and more proactively this year. So in the letter, for example, firms need to go away and assess their financial crime control framework against those four areas of weakness that I talked through and make sure they've done that gap analysis within 6 months. It's a clear indication that the FCA is not sitting on their laurels here. You need to make sure that this is in, you're in control of your risks and your controls are good. So that's the wider context. And the FCA, on top of that, is starting to throw out some more tricky and complex review processes, and they're being very proactive in terms of enforcement. So, for example, we're seeing more Section 165 information requests. That is quite extensive information requests. Mm. We're seeing a lot more Section 166 sort of skilled person reviews off the back of that as well. So if you do get a 165 request from the FCA, it's going to be pretty extensive. They have shorter turnaround times for you to be able to respond to that as well, it seems. And if you don't respond well, you will probably have to go and hire an expensive skilled person firm to come in and review your entire framework. So it's a really important issue at the moment.
Yeah, and we see it a lot. And you know, the points that you raised, especially with all the new crypto firms that are kind of pop up, all the e-money firms, and it must just be, how do you just keep on top of that? And I think the fact that they see this letter and there is some element of, you know, pressure to turn stuff around and, you know, implement those changes. And but it's not a one-time exercise, is it? And that's the key, is, you know, don't just tick the box and we're done with the regulator now. We've done the 165 and, you know, we can kind of breathe before we get a 166. It's a continual effort.
It is indeed, yeah. I think it's important to just remember, though, that this specific letter is just looking at Annex 1 firms.
Yeah.
And there are different requirements for, you know, fully authorized entities. The themes are much the same. And it all comes down to the fact that no matter what type of firm you are, you have your requirements. You need to make sure that you are aware of how you fit into scope of the money laundering regulations. And if you do come into scope, you need to make sure that all of your controls are in place and you are meeting all of those requirements. One very sort of specific and niche example, and one that firms often forget, is that in, I think it's around 2022, they added proliferation financing risks into the money laundering requirements. Mm. That includes firms having to go away and assess their exposure to proliferation financing. That's been in place for quite a while now. And most firms I speak to still don't know what proliferation financing is. So how do you know whether or not you're exposed to it? Now, of course, most firms aren't. That includes things like whether or not you're dealing with anything that touches chemical, biological, nuclear, radioactive weaponry. Most firms aren't. Yeah. They're not exposed to sort of funding of that or involvement in any of the trade that facilitates that. But you might be. So what about things like agricultural products that might then be used, if some fertilizers can be used in chemical weaponry? Then you might actually have some sort of minor exposure to this. But even if you don't think you do, you must still assess it. It's still in the requirements and is part of your expectation to manage those risks.
Yeah, that's a good point there. You may not directly be sourcing it, but actually indirectly, you're kind of linked in the chain. Somehow.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So. And financial crime is so broad because, and of course, it covers money laundering, but it covers fraud. And we're talking a lot about fraud at the moment. It covers proliferation financing. It covers tax evasion. It covers anti-bribery and corruption. There's lots of different risks that you might be exposed to and have to consider.
Yeah. Glad you mentioned fraud. So kind of stepping back more broadly, countering fraud and money laundering is a key strategic goal for the UK government. Can you touch on some recent publications and areas of focus?
Yes. So in May 23, so almost a year ago, the UK government announced their fraud strategy. And it was very, very clear in that document. We're all aware that 40% of all UK crime is fraud. So fraud is our biggest crime type. It needs to have a concerted effort across government, across police forces, across law enforcement, across regulators, financial institutions to try and deal with fraud. I don't know anyone that hasn't been exposed themselves or doesn't know someone that might have been involved in a scam or something to do with fraud problems. And it's a big issue. It's a big issue for businesses, has a big impact on individuals, and especially with the kind of economic kind of crisis at the moment, it can have a real personal impact. So with this wider focus on things like fraud, the government has announced lots of different initiatives, and we are in the middle of this fraud strategy at the moment. For example, payment firms are coming into scope of APP fraud mandatory reimbursement, that is authorized push payment fraud. They have to meet some very big requirements by October of this year. And basically, a customer that says they've been a victim of APP fraud must be reimbursed 50-50 by the sender and receiver. That's going to have a very big impact on small payment firms. They need to have full controls to try to stop it before it happens, but also operationally, how do you actually deal with the reimbursement process? So there's a lot that they need to do there. That's just one example. But then on top of that, the government, of course, is looking more broadly at money laundering as well. So, of course, you've got fraud, but then proceeds of fraud are then laundered. So money laundering is always looking at the proceeds of some kind of crime and trying to sort of push it through the system. The government has very recently, I think this month, announced a consultation looking at making the money laundering requirements more effective. So they know that these regulations are very big and onerous. There's quite a big cost to business. Of course, you have to often hire compliance consultants sometimes like us to bring us in and try and sort it out. It can be really costly. So I think this is an interesting one where the government knows that we have to deal with financial crimes and it's clear they're focusing on it, but they actually want to get people to respond to this consultation to understand where perhaps the requirements don't work as well. So looking at perhaps whether or not some elements are a little bit too onerous. We've patched a lot of things and amendments onto those requirements. Do they sit well? And the consultation is open until June. So I certainly encourage anyone to try and respond to that.
It's interesting that you say that because we're seeing a lot in the news and in things about payment frauds and kinds of other activities that are happening, especially with the age of digital, everything now moving digitally. You know, people are exposed as well to that side of it. It's, I say, better late than never. They've actually finally actioned it. And it's good that we're seeing that, you know, payment, like you say, payment companies that have to have all these things in place by October. And that's going to be tough because it's, you know, especially like you said, for small firms, that's going to be a big hit. So how do you monitor? How do you, you know, and you, effectively you've got to have funds as well, you know, aside to just in case that activity does happen. So
yes, it's, to be honest, it's going to be very challenging. The aim is in the right place. And we need to, of course, make sure people have, if they have been a victim, they need to have access to some kind of reimbursement. The large banks have been doing this for a long time on a voluntary basis, but banks have access to a lot more in terms of capital. A lot of these payment firms that, of course, they are very good in terms of bringing innovation to the UK. We've got great new apps. We've got great new ways of interacting with payments, faster payments. We've got new ways of dealing with our finances. These are all really great innovations. So we must build financial crime controls that don't stop innovation. But I sit on the Financial Crime Working Group at the Payments Association, and we've gone back and forth with, you know, interacting with government and policymakers to try to make sure that this is actually doable and we have the right guidance in order to make this work. Unfortunately, we're still not there yet. We're still waiting on quite a bit of guidance, which leaves payments firms with very, very small amount of time to actually implement this by the October deadline. So yes, we're still waiting on a number of things from the payment systems regulator, and it's going to be a challenge for sure. And I think we will see some of the smaller players fall out of the market because they won't be able to deal with the amount of reimbursement.
Yeah. Well, that's what always happens, isn't it? When regulation gets tougher, you naturally see people exiting markets or finding different strategies or different ways of working. So yeah, it's good that there's onus on this and actually there's kind of pace behind it as well. With all these notifications and papers, what does this mean for firms and how do they define their teams and actually action all this? Because there's so much here to do. Do you have some tips for our listeners?
I think top tip number one is maybe we need to do a second podcast on financial crime because there is so much that we need to talk about.
Just going
to
fill off on that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think we need to do a round two. But there are a few, I want to try and sort of, we try to cover a lot in a very short space of time and perhaps just leave firms with some practical things to look at. And the first one really is around getting your risk assessments right. Firms often do pretty good risk assessments in terms of operational risk, credit risk, because when you're building up a business, that's the primary thing you think about. But really looking at your financial crime risk is going to be very important. If I take fraud, for example, and you have a customer base that's 20, 30% fraudulent, you won't be operating for very long. You need to manage those risks very well. So making sure that you have a full understanding of what financial crime risks you might be exposed to, and then building controls off the back of that is going to be really important. And of course, that's the expectation from the regulator. It's not that you do a tick box risk assessment. It needs to be fully bespoke to your product, your customers, where you operate and what you do. And then the second thing is really around the governance structure. So making sure that you do have financial crime discussed at the appropriate forums, and you document things, because so often firms that get into problems haven't documented the decisions that they've made. So if you are taking a decision to do something in a certain way, that needs to be documented in the appropriate forums. Nice and simple, but have the meetings and take the minutes. And then the final piece is really around just making sure that you're keeping up to date with horizon scanning. Like I've just touched on a couple of things today, and it's all changing all the time.
Yeah,
there are new papers coming out. I mean, even today, the Wolfsburg Group published a piece around effective audit functions. There's a lot, and it comes out all the time. So make sure you try to keep up to date with all of the relevant changes and requirements, and also the changing risks as well. So, of course, the war in Ukraine has brought new risks in terms of sanctions. So, yeah, that perhaps that's a whole podcast in itself, but keep up to date with the risks, keep up to date with the regs, document things, and know your risks.
Brilliant. I'm always keen to understand, even if you're not an Annex One firm, would you see firms just saying, I'm not Annex One, worry about that later? Is that a dangerous thing to avoid as part of a tip to say, no, you should kind of still enforce all the things that are happening?
I think that would be not a good move at all. Anyone that works in financial crime knows they need to be aware of the general trend and views and thoughts of the regulator. As soon as you're on the wrong side of the regulator, that's a huge problem. And one of the ways you can build the best narrative with the regulator is being proactively aware of the new things that are coming out and any implications that might have on your business model. It takes 5 minutes to read that Dear CEO letter that came out. It's about 4 pages long. There are 4 key trends. It doesn't take you long to have a little look at those 4 key trends within your business to assess if you've got any issues in the same space.
Yeah, it's a good tip there. Thank you so much. That's been, I think we covered quite a lot.
I think we did, yeah.
100% sure for the second episode will be a lot more detailed.
Indeed, yeah. Looking forward to it. Thank you very much for having me on.
No problem. Thank you.